you picked a really great time to be tuned in. We have a pop-up guest that we did schedule for this morning, who's doing a residency here at the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh. We're going to give you a chance to hear something pretty special coming up in just a moment as we talk with artist and storyteller Crystal Wuerl. I think sometimes in this point and click virtual world we all seem to live in, we forget that weather is a thing. And Crystal actually walked over this morning. Hi, Crystal.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being with us. And I'd love to just learn a little bit more about you. I know we say Alaskan native, and I'll be the first to admit, I think those of us here in the 48 think of Alaska like, oh, Alaska, it's one monolithic place. It's all the same. And I know that's not true. Can you tell me a little about your life and your part
Absolutely.
Of Alaska?
First, let me introduce myself, how I was raised to introduce myself in the Tlingit language, and that's my tribe from Alaska. Kakia yuchat duasok, yech ayachat luka hadina chat siti, afna dakahidi yechit, shanguchedi yedi ayachat gonana nachat siti. My Tlingit name is Kakia, and my English name is Crystal Wuerl. I'm Tlingit and Athabascan. Those are both tribes from Alaska. In Alaska, we have over 200 federally recognized Alaskan Native tribes. If you were to include all of the different dialects, it could be well over 500 different tribes. So there's a huge diversity. It's a very big state, and even the weather itself is very diverse. Right now, it's actually colder than where I live in Juneau, Alaska, and there's actually more snow than us, too.
Wow. What are, one thing I always am curious about is the length of days in Alaska, the
yeah.
length of daylight.
Yeah.
Can you tell me more about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I keep waking up at 7:30 here thinking I'm late for work because the sun doesn't come up until about 11, maybe 10:30. And so I usually start my day around 9. I get up. I'm a full-time artist, and I run a business with my brother, Rico. The business is called Trickster Company. We're an innovative native graphic design and art gift shop, and we're also online at trickstercompany.com. And a lot of the things I do with my business correlate with my artist life as fine artist Crystal Wuerl, including artist residencies.
That's great. Now, the other thing about, I was thinking about how much daylight is in a typical day. Are days sometimes, is there very little daylight given
yeah.
the not geography, but longitude and latitude, I guess.
Yeah, it definitely ranges. The more north you go, the more extreme it is. In Juneau, let's see, the daylight's maybe around 10, and it's getting dark by 4. So you have very short daylight times, and it's pretty overcast. It's actually very similar weather to what it is right now. Overcast, kind of gray, and rainy 2 out of 3 days in Juneau. It is a rainforest.
Something else I was wondering, and, you know, the only way, well, you can learn by reading, too, but just to ask, you mentioned the native, as many as 500 different
dialects.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of how far back in generations some of the tribes go?
I do know that the Tlingit people have been documented to be in Alaska for, I know, at least 1,000 years, if not more. So it's quite powerful, and you can only imagine the feeling I have living within 100-mile vicinity of where my ancestors are from.
And are there artifacts, archaeological artifacts, or ways to help you physically connect to the community?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a very strong presence of Alaska Native identity in Alaska, especially in the arts, especially in Southeast Alaska, a Northwest Coast art, which is locally known as formline design, is very predominant in all along the Northwest Coast, up and through Alaska and Canada.
I was curious too. It's Tlingit, right?
Tlingit.
Tlingit. Would you find people with of the Tlingit tribe in Canada as well as Alaska?
Yeah, absolutely, Canada, and there's a lot of us living in Seattle today. Yeah.
This is a very selfish question, but one of the things I really admire about Radio Canada is they work hard to provide radio programming in First Nations languages. Do you know if anybody's doing that near where you live?
I've heard about it, and I know that there are language radio stations that feature language programs and episodes, and you know, this would be a good question for my younger brother. He's a Tlingit language teacher, and he does do YouTube videos. He's on the TV and the radio quite often with language, but he's more knowledgeable about it than I am. But it does exist. I'm not sure if it's in the same way as Canada, though.
Yeah, and actually, though, you've honed in on what I was curious about is There must be, well, there is, right, an important need to preserve language and culture. And one way of doing that is to connect people with a reason to, well, a way to listen easily and learn the language. Is that something, and radio can do that, language lessons can do it. Do people struggle with holding on to that heritage at all as younger generations come up?
There's definitely a challenge. I don't know a lot of fluent speakers my age. I'm 27, but I've been studying off and on with my brother, and it's definitely a challenge. You know, my life right now, I'm focused on learning the language of our art, our design, our formline design, and that's a whole language in itself, with math included. And in order for me to learn the art, a part of it is learning the language, the Tlingit language. But it's definitely a challenge. There's only so many elders left that fluently speak the language, and this is a common issue that's facing a lot of tribes throughout Alaska. But there is a few, programs online and documentation of the language. And again, I wish I knew more about this
to
share with you.
No, it's good. How do you spell it's Tlingit? Do you know what the Americanized spelling is? It K?
It's Tlingit. It's Tlingit.
Okay, because people, I'm imagining they can go online to learn more.
Yeah, so you can pronounce it Tlingit, or the way we pronounce it is Tlingit. So it's, you put the tip of your tongue behind the top of the top of your mouth, behind your front teeth, and let air go through the sides of your tongue.
Got it.
And that's an L sound in the Tlingit language.
If you're just joining us, this is Crystal Whirl, and the Children's Museum, it's lovely. She's here as an artist in residence doing formline work. I've seen some of the work that she created in collaboration with some children here, and she will continue to be here today, and I think tomorrow, I don't have your, I will get your schedule, and maybe you know it in your head, but you've still got a few days left, right?
Today is my last day at the Children's Museum,
okay.
Yeah, and I know I have a couple of other things I'm doing on Monday, so But unfortunately, today is my last day at the Children's Museum. It's been a wonderful time.
Well, I hope you'll consider coming in to see Crystal. And she's here from Juno. So let's talk about form line design. And I do know there's sort of a circular or arc component to it. I've seen, as I mentioned, work that you did in collaboration with some kids, but can you help us understand more about it?
So what I've been doing is working on mural collaboratives with the children, teaching them about the material gouache and what a mural is, and then mainly what form line design is constructed of. So form line design is designed from the basic shape called an ovoid. And an ovoid looks and sounds just like an oval. If you can imagine the bottom of an oval being flat, almost like a deflated basketball, ovoid. It sounds and looks like oval, ovoid. And so if you look at form line design, or you can Google Northwest Coast Design form line, you'll see ovoid shapes. And a lot of times other shapes coming off of ovoids, like U shapes, which are essentially ovoids cut in half. There are S shapes, which are two ovoids stacked, cut in half. So there's all this technique and methods behind developing form line design, and also in knowing where to be. The line gets thicker, the line gets thinner, and it is this graceful line of thick and thin, that weaves through an image, and it naturally is just aesthetically pleasing to the eye. It guides your eye around a piece in a circular motion and back to where it started, and it's kind of like looking at an infinity sign. It's a really beautiful, beautiful form of art that's hundreds of years old.
So the ovoids would all connect with one another?
Mm-hmm.
That's really amazing. So as you, the infinity sign is actually a really good way to picture it.
Yeah.
But you can convey different emotion and texture through the thickness of the line, maybe the color as well, and have, are there large works that cover walls?
There's actually, our traditional houses are called long houses. And the front screen is very big, with a small hole in the center, which is the entrance. And those are usually just carved relief and painted, or just painted. And those are very large and prolific. They're beautiful.
And does form line design go back hundreds and hundreds of years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's taken us hundreds of years to develop this beautiful art.
How did you learn it?
It's a mix of being self-taught, studying under artists that I really admire, and my brother, Rico Worrell. He's my older brother that works on the business with me. He helps me. We're kind of into studying a lot of form line books. There are a lot of books out there. There are a lot of websites. And there's a lot of learning by designing is a great book to start with. Right now, it's just copy the master's work and replicate it. And that's the best way of learning in terms of self-taught until you can pursue an apprenticeship. And one of my favorite artists is named Robert Davidson. He had told me that in order to take the step of becoming an apprentice, you must first master the basic ovoid by starting with 10,000 hours of practicing the ovoid design. Yeah, so it's definitely, there are small steps, but it's just being consistent. And even the masters will say to this day they're students of the work, because you can forever learn and study this art.
I am trying to remember the guitarist. It might have been Segovia, who, somebody asked him, why do you still practice? And he said, I think I'm getting better. You know,
yeah.
and you do have to keep going. It is, I just want to ground myself a little bit more in form line. Is, if you're a child growing up in Alaska, do you learn Probably not, because it's not universal, right? It's tribal. Would you learn about that as a child? Or
you would definitely see it around, because the art is definitely present. Right now, I'm hoping that there's change happening in the education system in terms of teaching our children about our history and who we are, and that we're still here today, and that's just kind of the first step. But our art is definitely there, and I know that there are many language immersion programs for young kids and youth today, and it's different for each tribe. I couldn't speak for them all, but I definitely see a presence, and I'm working to make more of a presence. We definitely have a lot to work on.
I think it's really important. This is Crystal Whirl, by the way, who's here from Juneau, courtesy of the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh and the Fine Art Residency Program. And, you know, we tend to think of Alaska as a different country as opposed to being part of the United States. So as we reflect and consider everything Crystal is saying, this is a heritage. Well, all cultures are worthy of exploring, but here's a culture within our own country that we should know more about and learn more about. It doesn't, I guess, have to be a U.S. culture, but it's just something important for us to know. The website, I heard Trickster, like T-R-I-C-K.
Trickster.
Is it Trickster dot something?
TricksterCompany.com.
That's easy. TricksterCompany.com. And you can see Formline Design and also learn more about the work of Rico, who is Crystal's brother, and Crystal. Now, you're also a storyteller.
Yes.
And tell me, I'm glad you can share a story with us, but tell me a little bit about your storytelling work that you do.
So a lot of the storytelling parallels with my artwork. I have to start by explaining how our kinship works. So in Tlingit kinship, our society is divided by two moieties. So two moieties. One is raven, one is eagle. So you're either a raven or eagle. It's matrilineal. So I was born into raven. And underneath your moiety are clans and then subclans. And so my clan is Sockeye. And so I would identify as I'm raven, Sockeye clan. And that allows me to tell certain stories that are raven stories, and also create images that are raven images that may or may not be a raven story. And a lot of my artwork has to do with watercolor, gouache, water, the use of letting water take movement with my ink and my paint. And most of the raven stories I tend to tell are about water and how raven, who is known as the trickster in Alaska and in Tlingit culture, he brought water to the earth and drinking water for the people who are his grandchildren.
Now, do you know Anansi in African storytelling?
It sounds familiar.
Anansi is a spider, and he is also known as the trickster.
Yes.
In African storytelling, which is, you know, their commonalities, of course, across people and cultures. So it's interesting. By you're a raven or an eagle, and then there are clans specific to each.
Mm-hmm. So raven and eagle, you're one or the other, and that's called the moiety. So you're one or the other, born to your mothers. And they create balance. So everything in our society is about balance and harmony. If you can imagine a sort of like yin and yang.
Yeah, well, even the colors, right? An eagle would be whitish, right? Raven is darker.
Yeah.
But then underneath, are there, how many clans are there under each bird? Are there dozens or?
I know of at least a couple dozen I could name under raven and then a couple dozen under eagle, but I don't know the actual number. Well,
that's okay. I was just looking for perspective. So across each line that basically identifies, among other things, the stories that you carry.
Yeah.
There are, it sounds like, 20, 30, maybe more mm-hmm. pathways that end up becoming your birthright and part of who you are.
It's my history.
Yeah.
It's a lineage, an ancestral lineage, so I can introduce myself in Tlingit and depending how long my introduction is, it could be the longer my introduction is, the longer in history I'm going back in my lineage.
That's really...
I actually wrote out my introduction one time in Tlingit, and I've written up to 2 full pages of my full introduction.
It's really interesting.
It gets longer the more I learn the language and the more I learn about my family and my clan's history and about my people's history.
Well, something I really like is the organization of this, I guess, or just the way the lineages work is it gives you certainly incentive to keep in balance by meeting people who fall in a different line or lineage. But it also encourages you to really become in touch with where you've come from and where you're going. So mm-hmm. what it's really interesting to think through. Are there any geographic differences? It doesn't sound, you're getting this all from your mom, right? So
it's a little bit more complicated than that. My father's side is Tlingit. My mother's side's Athabaskan. Because my mother is in Tlingit, I was adopted into a raven clan because my father's eagle.
I see.
And so when I get married, I have to marry an eagle.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So ravens and eagles marry to balance one another.
Yeah. And that's kind of everything we do is about balancing the other clan. It's about giving to them and helping them, when we have a loss or when the opposite clan is grieving. The raven clan will feed the eagle clan or vice versa. It's considered, what we actually consider wealth to be is how much we can give back. That's what wealth is to us. So we're constantly, even down to words are very important, exchanging words. A clan would thank the other clan for hosting them, or for giving, helping them out, whatever the occasion was. And then that clan would acknowledge the other clan. So there's this acknowledgement that goes back and forth. And you can kind of see there's this joke why Tlingit people talk so long. we can't have, a conversation within 5 minutes. It goes on and on and on. But we have to acknowledge, even when we're talking, addressing a group of people, we will acknowledge whose land we're on, which region we're on, and which clan it might belong to. There's all these protocols that...
It's probably hard to say goodbye, I'll bet, or lengthy to say goodbye. Or...
I actually don't know if there's a word for goodbye in Tlingit or Athabaskan. It is funny, on the phone, if you talk to an Athabaskan elder on the phone, when they're done talking, they'll just hang up. There's no goodbye.
This is Crystal Worrell, who is with us, and she's from Juneau and is here as part of the Fine Arts Residency at the Children's Museum. And I thank you for being so generous talking about your story and your culture. These are kind of personal questions. I really appreciate your sharing. And I know other people listening right now do too. We were starting to talk about a story. And So you are the stories that are part of your history are Raven, mm-hmm. and I forget the clan. It's Raven.
Sockeye. Salmon.
Salmon. Yeah. And tell us more about that, and then I'd love to hear a story. Have you share a story with folks?
Yeah, so my stories and my art are interrelated. A lot of times you'll look at my art and you'll see a bird. It's a raven most of the time. And sometimes the raven might be intertwined with another creature like bear or a halibut, and that could be a story about how the halibut hook came to be. There's also a lot of water included in my paintings and in my stories. That's raven and water. And today I want to share a story about how raven brought drinking water to earth. So a long time ago, Raven, the trickster, was walking along the beach. And as you know, Raven, he's always looking for something to do or for something to eat. He's either always bored or always hungry. And this day, Raven was thirsty. He was so thirsty. In fact, the entire world was thirsty. And Raven, he couldn't find any fresh drinking water because, you see, there was the ocean. But I don't know if you've ever had ocean water. It's pretty nasty. And so Raven went on a mission to look for fresh drinking water so that he could give drinking water to everyone. And so Raven went flying, looking, looking. And as he flew over the land, he remembered he knew someone that contained a box of fresh drinking water. And his name was Ganook. And Raven thought, I think I'll go give Ganook a visit. I haven't seen him in a while, my good old buddy. And so Raven flew really, really far across the ocean to go find his brother Ganook. Finally, when Raven arrived, he was exhausted and even more thirsty. He was so thirsty. Raven landed and he saw Ganook. Ganook sitting on a box. "Hey, partner, how's it going? It's been a while." Raven elbowing Ganook. Ganook crossed his arms. "Hi, Raven. What are you doing here? I haven't seen you in a long time." "Oh, nothing, partner," said Raven cheesily. I heard you have a box that might have something cool that I don't know what's inside of it." Ganook looked annoyed. "Raven, I think you should go. There's nothing here for you to see. You can get your black, shiny eyes and fly away." Raven laughed. "Well, don't mind me. I'm just gonna hang out and visit with my buddy Ganook, if you don't mind." Doo-doo. Raven waited and waited. Ganook would not budge from the box. You see, Raven knew what was in the box, even though he was acting like he didn't. There was actually fresh drinking water in the box, and a lot of it, but Ganook wouldn't move. So Raven waited, and he waited, until finally Ganook fell asleep. "Aha," Raven thought, "I have an idea." Raven walked along the beach. He picked up a stick, and he spotted some dog doo-doo. And he scooped the stick to pick up some of the doo-doo. He walked over Ganook, and he, as Ganook was asleep, he wiped it on Ganook's tuk. Woo-hoo-hoo. Tuk is Tlingit for butt. "Hey, partner, wake up. I think you have something that you need to go clean up, brother." Ganook woke up. "What was that smell?" "Oh." Ganook looked at his bottom. "Oh. Gosh, how embarrassing." "Hey, partner," said Raven. "I think you better go wash yourself off." So Ganook, embarrassed, ran to the ocean to clean himself off. Meanwhile, Raven, he went up to the box. He opened the lid, And inside was the most beautiful blue water you could ever imagine. And Raven stuck his beak in. And Raven drank all of the water that was in the box. It was so much water. It was so much water. It was almost as much water as the ocean. And he held it in his belly full. And he drank every last drop. Finally, Ganook came back, and he had seen what Raven had done. And Raven, full and round and clumsy, uh-oh, I gotta get out of here. As Raven tried to waddle away, full of water, Ganook grabbed Raven. Raven, you're in trouble. And Raven, poor Raven, he couldn't get away. And so Ganook grabbed Raven, and he threw him into the fireplace, and he began to build a fire under Raven. Raven, you are in big trouble, Ganook said. But you see, this is an old story. And Raven used to be white, you know. He had white feathers. And as Ganook built the fire underneath Raven, the soot began to burn Raven's feathers. And Raven, poor Raven, he began to turn black. All of his feathers began to singe. And Raven was in so much pain, a tear rolled out of his eye. But he held on to that water. He held it, and he held it, and he thought, I must hang on to this water. I need this water for my grandchildren so that they can drink water and their children can have fresh drinking water. Finally, when Raven could barely stand the pain anymore, Ganook let him go. And Ganook threw Raven into the air and told him to get out of here. Chook! Poor Raven flying in the air, a giant, fiery, black soot ball in the air, full of water. He flew over the land, flapping his poor, clumsy, burnt wings. But as he flew over the land, the water began to drip from his beak. Drip, drip. And each time a drip landed and hit the earth, it created a lake. It created a creek. It created a river. It created fresh drinking water for everyone. And finally, the last drip hit the ground. And Raven landed on the beach. And he saw the people for the first time quenching their thirst. And he looked over the beach and thought, what shall I do now?
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
What a great story to tell. Thank you for sharing it. That was Crystal Whirl. Now, she'll be at the Children's Museum today, if you make it. And you're still in Pittsburgh tomorrow as mm-hmm. well. Where will you be tomorrow?
Tomorrow is my day off, okay. I'm not sure what I'll do yet. So. Yeah, I might be back here for the Speak Life Storytellers.
They're great. Yeah. I've known both of those gentlemen for a long time. They're young and they're developing more and more of a style. Not that they didn't start with one, so you might enjoy them. And it's TricksterCompany.com, spelled the way you'd expect it to be, TricksterCompany.com. And there you can learn more about Formline Art, mm-hmm. learn more about Rico, your brother, yeah. and also Crystal. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention that I may have neglected to ask you? Or?
This has been a wonderful opportunity, and if you're curious to learn more about Formline, definitely check out our website. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram. We're always posting where I'm at, where my brother's at, and where the business is going, and any opportunity is where we're offering Formline lessons or sharing our art or working with other artists in our community.
And Crystal, where do you go after Pittsburgh? Back home?
I go back home.
Well, a safe journey.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here with us today.
Thank you so much.